There you go.
All right, here we go. Well, hello, Mr. Sudsy. It's been a long time.
Hi, Todd Boss.
Do you know what I want to ask you about today?
I have no idea, and I kind of like it because then we discussed it. It's much more organic. I do not know where we're going to go with this.
So the other day, I got pushback on, in the midst of doing some commentary or some comments about the state of our sport, and
Okay.
I had someone pull out for me one of my pet peeves about claims of why racquetball is dying.
Okay.
Claim is, stop me if you've heard this before. The claim is that racquetball is dying because the ball goes too fast.
I've heard it.
Have you heard that one before?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure we've heard most of these, the reasons why, right? Everybody's got an answer.
So when I say that to you, as someone who grew up playing in the 90s, I mean, what's your immediate thought?
Silly. It's nonsense. The speed of the ball has nothing to do with it. There's been so many changes. Not just in our sport, in society, in the world, options for kids, every sport, pretty much, there's an evolution in technology or the way it's played or the athletes. And in our case, the ball and basically they tie that in also with the oversized rackets, right? Which is just silly. Again, that's not the reason why. It's not even part of the reason, I don't believe. That's my thought. Those are my initial thoughts, as you asked.
Well, here, I'll give you some interesting thought points here. When Marty Hogan started hitting the when Marty Hogan hit the scene, he was clocked to hitting the ball 142 miles an hour in the late 70s, before oversized rackets. Before 22-inch rackets, before any of that.
Okay.
142 miles an hour for context. Now I know that you hit the ball 190.
Well, thank you.
But 142 miles an hour for context is about what your run-of-the-mill pros hit the ball at today. And I'm talking about like the power players, but I'm talking about, if I gave you some names of what we would top probably call control players, that's about what they hit. That's about what they hit the ball with today.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree that that's probably, I mean, that's a high average speed for sure. As an example, they recently did a women's speed gun contest. They do it often. And I think that was more than 10 miles per hour faster. And I'd say on average today, a lot of top pros outside of some power players are right around there. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Man, I was gonna try to pull up the results of that because I know that Erica was the one that won it. This is gonna
Yeah, I
make.
think she was 132, maybe.
Here
Maybe.
it is. So in May of 2022 at the Sweet Caroline, they put the players on a radar gun.
Okay.
Erica Mania, they did three readings each. Erica Mania came in first. Her forehands were measured at 125, 127, and 128.
Oh, okay.
The next closest was Samantha Salas, 119, 118, 120. Vargas and Munoz were right in that same range. Then there was kind of a gap down to Sintejas, Scott, Lawrence, Mendez, who were hitting like the 112 to 113 range. And then we also got readings for like Meneses, Longoria, Paria. Interestingly, Paola only hit at 107 to 108 at her max speed. Speaking of
Very
range.
interesting. But I'll tell you who the hardest hitting female is that I've ever been on a court
Let me guess. Are you married to her?
I'm not. No. Backhand. Yeah, maybe she is. Mari Cruz Ortiz hits the ball harder than anyone.
Oh yeah, she does put a charge into it. Okay,
Yep.
so the point is that the ball's been going 140, which is harder than any pro female hits it today, and it's
Sure.
harder than probably 20 to 30 miles an hour harder than most amateurs hit the ball, and that's been,
Probably. That's
and
fair. Yeah, one four. That's a nice number. I
you
mean,
know. Well, so this is all part of my argument here. You can make the argument that racquetball distinguished itself from paddleball in the late 70s precisely because it had power, right?
sure. Yeah, of course. Yep. It was speed, it was faster, it demanded a lot more movement, explosive movement. I've played them both. Yep.
Yeah. Here's another trivia question for you.
Okay.
In what era or what year do you think that USAR membership peaked?
What year did it peak? Okay, I'm guessing some. Am I right to say in the 80s?
Nope, a little bit later.
90s?
Early 90s.
Really?
So
Okay.
the highest publicized, and I'm going based on the figures that they put onto their 990, because every year in the
Sure.
990 they would say that they have X number of members and X number of people play. So in 1993 they peaked at 32,000 members. By the way,
Wow.
we have about a tenth of that right now, in case
Is
you
that
were
so
wondering.
it peaked at 33,000 members, USA Racquetball, and you're saying today, March 21st, 2025, we have maybe 3,000?
I think we have 3,000, 3,500, something like that. I don't have the exact figures, and I don't have access to
Sure.
that information because I'm off the board. But interestingly, right at the same time, when do you think the IRT had its most pro events? What season?
94?
93, 94 season, you had 19 tier ones in addition to a bunch of satellites. You guys were so busy, and I don't need to tell you this, but the rules, you guys were so busy that the rules were in place so that if you missed an event, you would get default points as an
Yeah,
incentive.
we that was the first year I won my first pro stop, the Pro Nationals in 94. And yeah, I remember it was play a final on Sunday, get ready to travel on Tuesday or Wednesday again. I mean, it was constant.
So I mentioned all this because it's all kind of part of the same argument here. So the ball was going 140 in the late 70s. It's why the sport exploded and differentiated itself from paddleball. Throughout
Sure.
the 80s, it grew, grew, grew. We peak in terms of participation and in terms of like organizationally in the early 90s. By the way, the 22-inch racket was introduced in 95 and codified into the rules in 96. So basically, the 22-inch racket, the non-pressurized balls, have been in place since the exact same point when our sport was at its peak. So here we are in the year 2025. Why do people now claim that the speed of the ball is the reason that we've had this inexorable decline in the sport?
It's the
Why do
age
people
of
keep
the
clinging to this?
Yeah, it's the age of the internet, and I think when you say people, who, what people? It's just because there's a few people, and that's maybe another conversation. But welcome to the internet, right? And social media, one or two people out of thousands make a claim, and like all of a sudden, people say, they buy into it that that's the reason, or this is a potential reason. It's just a claim. I don't think there's people, but I think there's definitely some chatter about it. But in our sport, Todd, sadly, we're all looking at what are the reasons for the massive decline. The ball being too fast is laughable. But again, I mean, I think we've seen most of the people out there that think they know the answer, and what we need to do. I could tell you this: I don't know the answer. I don't have the answer today. Exactly what we can do or. Is collectively we can talk about things and mistakes maybe that have happened or lack of vision. Sure, we can talk about that. That when we were peaking, what was the plan to sustain that peak and sustain those memberships? I think that's probably another discussion, right?
Yes.
But being that this is the ball discussion, could we lend to it potentially turning a few players away? Maybe as much as we would lend to, golf making a new ball or Titleist making a new ball and telling somebody, oh no, you're going to hit it too far. I'm not buying it. I'm out on that. I'm out on that theory.
I think the ball going too fast also pivots into another topic. Really, and it's related to the streamability or the viewability, the televisability, if that's a word, of the sport.
I mean, I've been, no, that's bullshit. I disagree with that. Today's day and age, I've spoken to major producers. I believe you have too. Professionals. I mean, certainly even our Sean Royster, a racquetball player who does it as well. He's said it too. Anything can be filmed today. Come on, we can film it. Plenty of technology, plenty of cameras. It is not that at all.
I get the sense that people see, the only way that we consume racquetball right now is via Facebook streaming, frankly. The Pro
Pretty
Tour
much
stream.
streaming, yeah.
Yeah, streaming. So if you think about and you have been on site when like Pablo or the LPRT sets up this equipment, they're basically getting like a $5,000 camera and they're hanging it kind of center back of the court, and they're dependent on the local Wi-Fi for bandwidth, and they don't have multiple angles generally, or if they do, it's just basically center mid plus right and left side, and it's really difficult for someone to like switch between. You know, we're not talking like an NFL game that's got a truck out back and a dozen people like trying to kind of coordinate. You know, and so the experience therefore that most of us consume the sport is, you know, it's a grainy ball that you can barely see on a TV, on a phone, or on a computer screen. So
Sure.
I can understand why some people make that claim.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, and it's one of the things, you know, that I've been saying. If I was to invest or bring investors in to try to help it, I would create a controlled environment. If I was trying to bring it to the masses, put it out there, because the masses are on devices, on social media, on your computers and laptops and streaming. I would create an optical spectacle for the world to see racquetball. The only way I can do that, can't rely on a small little local mom and pop club with spotty Wi-Fi and dirty, scratched up glass. I would build a court that is catered to what I am going to be pushing out to the viewer. I would not worry about the people or players on site. It would be what is happening inside that court to show the incredible athleticism, power, strength, everything that we see in racquetball. And then I would introduce it, show it that way. And then I would also explain to every other sport and parent and kid, child, hey, here's how racquetball can help you, not only in your other sports, but in life. And then who knows? Maybe we have a chance, but we got to create it so that it's consistent and it's just an optical spectacle.
Yeah, you know, I mean, frankly, the answer is, you know, the last time that we really had really well done video was at the World Games in Birmingham. You know, the World
I was
Games
good.
brought the portable court down, put it into I believe they put it into a local gym at the university.
Yep.
And they brought in four real professional, you know, like NFL quality cameras to broadcast. And you can find that broadcast out there right now. You know, the glass is clean. It
Oh, it's
shows
clean.
moving, you know,
Yeah, the
cameras moving
cameras, they know
around.
what they're doing. Yep, looks fantastic.
It looked fantastic.
But again, you know, and I'll say this to all of us out there that are doing, you know, putting it out there. And I say it all the time, Todd. I'm like, I don't care who you are, where you are, just try to put racquetball out there. You know, obviously we all have different abilities, capabilities, time, right? I mean, if I just go stream at the club, it takes time, it takes money. It just does. You know, it's easy to say. And then some people listen to this, right? And they'll be like, oh, bullshit, just turn your phone on. Yes, I agree with that. You could do that too. That's doable as well. But yeah, until you know, maybe the tours are looking at that. Maybe the associations are, but I would stop catering to the on-site crowds. Those people will always be there. Figure out how to produce something at a minimum quality of that world games that you're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. You know, like we and you're right. I certainly get caught up in the commentary of the people that are in our, you know, in our sport. We don't have to sell them. They're already sold. You know, they're engaged. They're passionate.
They'll always be there. I say it all the time. It's
Yeah.
not about us. It's not a, we will always be there.
Yeah.
We will, you know, we're all on our, we've used the term, it's crappy, but like a living eulogy, right? And you know, we're all doing the best we can.
All right,
So
I got one more question for you.
go for
You ever watch squash on the internet for the
it.
PSA?
I have come across it.
So,
I wouldn't say I've like stopped to watch it for an extended period of time, but of course I've seen it, yes.
professional squash, you know, and I'm going to caveat this by, you know, in case you didn't know, they are incredibly well funded, both in the US
Yes.
and internationally. So, in a lot of ways, this is an apples and oranges conversation, but you know, squash has this space age purple court that they take around with a white ball, and when you stream it, you know, people make the argument that it's a lot easier to see that ball on that court, and then they make the inevitable argument that, you know, that's what racquetball needs, is we need a PSA or a Professional Squash Association style purple court with white equipment, and then that's going to solve all of our problems. Do you
Yeah, no,
what do you
that's
think
not the
about
case.
that?
Again, that would be part of my plan to build this court that is specifically made for whatever it is or however I'm going to stream it, produce it, and send it out there. I've been to that court. The squash court. I was at Grand Central Station. I know the court you're talking about. My court would have some LED lights. It would have, it would take money, right? Like, but again, if we're swinging for the fences, yeah, we would need to build a court specific for audio and video. Absolutely. And you got to just leave it stationary. It was fun to think about the portable, but let's try to get back to that. But at this point, we're just trying to do everything we can to, quite frankly, stay alive. Keep the sport relevant, not the laughing stock on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. It is what it is,
Very cool. Well, thanks for talking through my pet peeve topic du jour. I'm sure that everyone will listen to this and either vehemently agree or vehemently disagree and tell us why we're morons. And I look forward to it.
Thank you, Todd. Talk soon.
All right, talk to you later.